Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots non-profit radio station in Laguna Beach, California, from anywhere in the world on kx935.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. But right now, here's that podcast from KX93.5.
KXRN LP Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach. Member supported KX93.5. 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to the Friendship Show. Each week brings a full hour of great conversation and the chance to visit with old and new friends. Sponsored by Friendship Shelter, bringing hope and opportunity to the men and women who need it most.
In this studio this morning, our very good friend, the founder of The Heartway, Dr. Andrea Dearhart, is here. Good morning, dear.
Good morning, my friend.
How are you this morning?
Always beautiful when I get to come here and be with you.
Oh, that's the right answer.
It's the truth.
Happy holidays to you.
And to you.
I don't know. There still might be someone who doesn't realize that you're the founder of The Heartway, an incredible organization here in Laguna Beach, helping people by honoring life and honoring death. Yes? The Death Doula. That's your name.
One of those names. Yeah. The Heartway is dedicated to supporting individuals and their families through the dying process with love and kindness. Patients and their families never pay for services. The Heartway tries. Our goal is to bring the sacred into the dying process, honoring all spiritual traditions. Kind of the Heartway practitioner is one part advocate, one part counselor, and one part minister for
those
in need. Yeah.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
Can I ask you some personal questions while you're here?
Sure.
All right. What did you do for Thanksgiving?
What did I do Thanksgiving? It was a lovely Thanksgiving. I got to spend it with my mom and my family. My mom's been going through some health issues, so originally I was going to be out of town, and we just moved everything to her house. So what was so special about it this year for me was really contemplating this might be the last Thanksgiving I have with my mom. And had families come together, myself and my beautiful love and my former husband and my daughter. And we all sat around a table just kind of sharing the beauty of creating and honoring our evolving family. It was just beautiful.
Wow.
I was just touched.
Wow. You got all that done? what did you make?
What did I make?
Yeah.
That's always a question I get asked as
I don't see you eating stuffing and mashed potatoes.
No. I am a vegetarian and mostly eating non-animal products that works best for my body. So I made a yummy saffron and wild mushroom arugula risotto.
Come on.
I made a cashew and walnut and cranberry cheese and squash soup. That was kind of and a Brussels sprouts.
Oh, really? Roasted?
And dates, roasted.
Oh, really? Roasted Brussels sprouts and dates?
Yeah, yummy.
Oh, my gosh.
Sorry you asked.
that sounds really, that's like five-star haute cuisine sort of.
Love to have you next year,
just
okay?
Cooking. That'd be awesome. I would say, you know what I did on Thanksgiving? I slept until 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
You would have made it to dinner. We didn't eat till 5.
Oh my gosh!
Next year, the invitation's open.
And what about Christmas? What will you do for the Christmas holidays?
Christmas holidays, I think I will be up in Nevada City area and heading up to Portland area and down the coast for a little journey if I can get away.
Oh, really? You're going on a trip?
Yeah. I hope. We'll see.
The last time you played, how long have you been in town? Every time that we see you, you're flying in from somewhere. You flying in from somewhere today?
No, I'm grounded.
Oh,
I've
you
been
are?
Here. Yep.
Have you been here a while?
I have. Yeah, I'm finishing up some projects. Ellie's Ride, Beyond Imagination and Death. I finished its final edits at 2 a.m., which I'm very grateful for. So she will hit the streets in April.
In April?
So excited.
So Ellie's Ride is this your first book?
It is.
This is your first book.
Yeah, it's so special for me. It's a story of a beautiful young girl. Her name was Ellie, and she was my daughter's best friend, and she died of osteosarcoma cancer 10 years ago, April 23rd, 2017, 10 years ago. And this is a story I had the honor of supporting and companioning her and her family through. And this is a story of her dying process. It's a creative nonfiction. So what that means, or an imaginal biography, what that means, it's based on truth.
I would say, now, let's go back a minute. There's no such thing as an imaginal biography. You created that.
Well, kind of, sort of, but yeah.
Point me to one other imaginal biography.
Well, it didn't fit in the genre, kind of like The Heart Way. It's kind of a paradigm.
I totally get it, right? And I've seen the book, and I've read parts of the book, right? So to me, like, I get it. It's the story of this little girl, but it's really sort of the story about her inner fantastical journey.
Yeah, and what happens beyond death. One of the things in our culture, our imagination has been a little squelched with some of the cultural prevailing myths like fear of death and denial of death. So in Ellie's journey after death, she goes into all these mythological realms, and we start to get images and imagination in what might be beyond. And we know that brings a little bit more comfort, safety, and reduces our fear for those of us approaching death and or supporting loved ones through. That's what my hope and intent, and I've read it to several clients in their dying process, and it's been a real profound experience. I'm reading it right now with one client.
So this is a story about a little girl, but is this a book that children should read, or is this for everyone to read?
It's for everyone to read, and little children won't be able to stay with the story at this point, but Ellie, because she has a mythological elephant called Nazijan, which means grace in the breath of the soul. And it's a multi-headed elephant. It has a children fascination and imagination, but I need to rewrite it to touch the imagination of children, which is on my list for the future.
Oh, really? So you think that there'll be another version of this story?
Yes.
Ellie will be a reoccurring character in different stories and different books?
Yeah, with her imaginal elephant, Nazijan, taking her on adventures beyond.
Oh, we should do an animation.
Definitely. There is an animation of her. A dear friend and artist, Kay Hagen, has designed the original artwork. And the first release of Ellie's Ride is going to be a limited edition, only 200 copies, copper-plated artwork, hand-stitch binding.
I say, because it takes about 12 days to put this book together, I bet. One just, book.
It's such a labor of love. And all the proceeds go to the Heart Way. To support families in need, because there's no charge for those services.
When this becomes an animated series or an animated short film, wherever you do it, I would just say I would like to audition for the voice of Nazijan.
I would love you to be Nazijan.
Nazijan?
Nazijan.
Nazijan.
It's a Farsi word, because Ellie was an Iranian girl. And the book is with a producer and writer right now.
Oh, really?
It's become some type of production. We're just in the beginning stages of what this might look like. So it's thrilling. It's just
you're on thrilling. It. It may be a stage adaptation? Oh,
that's where you come in, my friend.
A stage adaptation? Oh, my gosh. I would just say, imagine, right, staging a multi-headed magical elephant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Have you seen The Lion King?
Oh, yes.
It can be done.
So all it's right. Thrilling to share that, and hoping that it supports and serves others as well.
And like you said, this book is the story, obviously, which is the heart of the book. But the manuscript is a work of art. I mean, from the printing to the paper to the cover to the artwork. I mean, this is something that you sit on your table and invite people to look at, not just read.
I hope so. That's what the desire is. It's hand done, and there'll be a pocket. One of the main themes through the story is it's actually a book of love letters, Mark. Ellie is writing. She's narrating through my imagination and my soulful imprint of her in my heart pocket. She's narrating this story, and each chapter is a love letter to her mom, and each chapter starts, "As I lie dying, Madar," and Madar is Farsi for mother. She has this connection with her mom and feels her pain as she's lost her physical body. And she writes these stories for her mom in hopes of her mom's healing and growth. So she takes her along in her heart pocket through these journeys and sharing and teaching. And in the back of the book, there's a heart pocket. And in the heart pocket is a poem that Ellie's mom wrote to her. So it's a real touchable, beautiful, just etched book. I couldn't be more thrilled. And the blessing is the people that have touched Ellie's ride knew Ellie.
Oh.
So it's absolutely a labor of love.
I kind of want to cry just hearing about it. Yeah. I mean, it sounds absolutely just heartbreakingly beautiful.
I am in tears. It's just been a privilege and honor. And I set out to write the book, to be very honest, for Ellie's mom, who is a dear friend of mine. And a couple years after Ellie's death, she was starting to have a lot of pains and sadness in the continual grief process, which I did want to bring up today with the holidays too. And I asked her what that was about for her, and her comment was, "I'm afraid everybody's going to forget Ellie."
Mm-hmm.
All children are magical, of course, and children with terminal diseases like go on this portal of development, and they're just wise beyond any words. And so this is when I got inspired to document and somehow have Ellie's memory touch as many people as possible. So it feels so beautiful as an offering to the family. It also will be published in Farsi. It's being translated in Farsi now because that was Ellie's native language, and that's such a thrill to be able to hand an original to Ellie's family in native language.
I think it should be translated into Sanskrit.
I would love to see it travel
all languages. Imagine what it would look like translated into like Chinese or Japanese.
It would be beautiful, especially in this type of manuscript.
Love letters are a convention that you use frequently, regularly. It's a powerful device for you.
It is, and it's a great tool right now for all of us. You know, the holidays are just laced with a conundrum of experiences, right? From everything from being stressed out to feeling the most incredible love that we feel all year round, that something magical sometimes comes in the air. And most of us reach beyond at this time because of that. And there's so much turmoil going on in the world in general besides our own narratives that we have. And it's a beautiful tool to process through emotions, whether it's grief or sadness or anger or profound gratitude. And I've used it personally all my life, and that's how it evolved into writing Ellie's book, is when I sat down and go, okay, I got to write a novel. How do I do this? And I was so frightened. I didn't have that confidence in my skill that I went, well, what kind of writing do I like to do? And I love writing love letters, and people for years have seen how much they love receiving the love letters. So I decided to write a book of love letters.
Isn't that the magic of it, right? Because you're right, like, oh, I'm going to write a book. What business do I have writing a
exactly.
book?
Exactly.
And they say, well, what do I do? What is my vehicle? And to say, I write love letters. I can pump out love letters all day long.
I can. As soon as you say love letters, the heart gets just yanked open. Good right away.
That's what I had a very smart man one time say to me when I was writing children's plays, and he said to me, "Well, there's two things you can do, Mark. You can write as if all of the children's plays have already been written, and you're just adding on to what's already been done, and that's fine. Or you can write your children's play as if no children's play has ever been written before this children's play, and you can do anything that you want. Why are you confining yourself
mm-hmm.
if you don't want to?"
Yeah, exactly. And that confinement often is our stories of past or future, not what's happening in that moment. And love letters bring you right into that moment as well.
All right. You were talking about the holidays. And mm-hmm. For people who have lost loved ones, the holidays yeah. can be a particular difficult time. Can we take a quick music break, and then when we get back, can we talk some more about that phenomenon for people?
Yeah, I'd love to.
And what people might do during this time of the year. All right. Andrea Dearhart, Dr. Andrea Dearhart, is our guest this morning. She's the founder of The Heart Way. We're going to take a music break, and we'll be back right after this.
I've never been alone long enough to know if I ever was a child. Tied up like a boat, unbuttoned like a coat, set free for a while. Well, I jumped to jolt my clumsy blood while my white.
Welcome to The Friendship Show on KX 93.5. My name is Mark Miller. In the studio this morning, we've been talking with Dr. Andrea Dearhart, our dear friend here on KX 93.5. We were before the break, Dr. Dearhart, we were talking about the holidays, and particularly sort of the feelings, the emotions that come up for people who have lost someone at this time.
Mm-hmm.
How do people deal with that?
Oh, we all deal with it in our home process in our own way. And, you know, the grief process is a complicated experience for us because, as I said earlier, kind of a conundrum of emotions. It's not just anger. It's not just sadness. It's just not longing. It's not yearning. It's all of the above, sometimes in the same second. And I believe everybody will experience it in, like, waves and tsunamis in the ocean. Comes in real quick and does its work and goes out, and then before, unexpectedly, the emotions come back in. That's how we know we're in grief, when something kind of lands, pushes us off out of nowhere sometimes. I think those emotions are best served by honoring them. What are they? How do they feel? How are they touching us? The goal is not to feel. The goal is to honor and embrace those feelings so that we can grow through them, deepen, and love more. Okay? And the holidays bring them up for obvious reasons. Memories, the traditions, the sensations, kind of like in our cellular body, of remembering, sharing moments with loved one at these times. Or if it was a recent death, last year we did this at Thanksgiving and we did this at Christmas. And there is a painful yearning with that, and a missing and a longing.
Let me ask you this, right?
Sure.
Because the other day, or last week, my sister sent me a picture of her Christmas tree. And then she sent me a close-up and said, Dad's Christmas ornament. And I sort of kind of remember that ornament. I mean, it was like, oh, that's familiar to me. And so I said, did he have that when he was alive, or did you just get that to have on the tree? And she said, no. This was the Christmas ornament that Dad had when he was a little boy.
Oh.
Right? And then you're right. And then I'm pushed off into something.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you navigate it? Do you know what I mean? Because
mm-hmm.
I don't...
Yeah.
Because I got to get up and go to work, Andrea. I don't uh-huh. I don't have time to get pushed off in, uh-huh. you know, my dad is a little boy and me uh-huh. is a little boy and all of the things that come with that.
Yeah.
So how do you navigate?
I think there's several ways, and each person's got to find that path that feels right for them. First of all, it's honoring that. Wow, look where I'm going with these emotions. And if there's no time to process at the moment, I don't necessarily like to compartmentalize emotions. I like to work with it. That quick love letter, a note to self. Wow, I want to explore these thoughts and feelings. But I wanted to say something a minute ago, that these feelings of grief also represent love. When I grieve, as painful as it is, I also know it means that I'm loving and have loved. And that's one of our basic needs. And inspires. So tools, though. Let's talk about tools that people can use when these emotions are coming up and throwing us off our balance. The love letters is a tool. We already talked about it. Mm-hmm. Finding that support system to talk about it. Rituals. And that's why the holidays bring up so much emotions, because they're rituals. And rituals have a profound imprint in our heart, in our soul, in our spirit. And that's why they take us beyond that ego-conscious language and take us somewhere else. It's kind of like watching one of your productions. We get moved. We get moved off balance in a different place of our existence. Grief does the same thing. Hmm. Moves us beyond.
My mom was in town a couple of weeks ago. Don't give me that look, because I told you she was in town and you chose to go somewhere.
I'm so sorry, mister.
And she was too. It was like her big disappointment of the trip was that I won't get to meet Andrea. And I said, Andrea's a very busy woman, Mom.
Mom, if you're listening, I promise next time.
Right. So I'm, you know, trying to think of things, you know, to do with my mom. Right. So we drove over to San Juan Capistrano, and I said, well, let's go look at the mission. That's an interesting thing. And then we actually went into the church. I really love that church down there,
beautiful.
By the way. It's beautiful. But the thing that I love about it is that it's open all the time. Like, when there's not, like, a mass going on, like, the church is just open, and there's people in it, like, doing things. Mm-hmm. We went into the church, and my mom loved it. But the thing that she wanted to do was, she said, oh, while I'm here, do you think I can light a candle for Dad and Mike? And I'm like, well, I think so. I mean, it doesn't seem like the kind of place where someone would get testy about that sort of deal. It sort of seems made for it, doesn't it, Mom? And that was her ritual, was to light this candle and to say her prayers and to remember, mm-hmm. So that those things aren't forgotten for her.
Absolutely, and that would have been my next place, is all these rituals or experiences take us into our divine energy, faith, spirit, whatever that is.
Right.
Whatever that is. And that, often, that energy gives us the hope, gives us the opportunity to feel supported in these emotions. I think one of the things where we get a little caught up is, oh, I don't want to feel these feelings because they're really uncomfortable. And if I do it right and do all these things, I won't have to feel, because they said, if I do use these tools and do all these things, I don't have to feel. Well, it really is all about feeling. It's feeling in a way that can support us to be all that we can be. And if we turn our cheek to the shadow and the dark emotions that we have, they just get buried and they bubble up and they come out whenever they want. Well, often it's not as pretty.
I would say, oh my gosh, do they? Let me tell you some of the unproductive ways that can happen, right?
Absolutely. And for me, to be very honest, it really is supporting ourselves. Don't we spend a lot of time saying, oh, I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have felt in that way. I shouldn't have done this. Da, da, da. I could have done this. All these systems that we have, one, not to feel, and the expression of the emotion really doesn't last that long. And then you're somewhere else.
And isn't it, though, when you think about, like, you're a helping person, right? And I work in a helping organization. Mm-hmm. And you spend a lot of your time trying to help other people. Isn't that when one of the biggest things you can do to help other people is make sure that you've helped yourself, right?
Absolutely.
Make sure that when you're coming at it, your backyard is in order.
It's always an inside job. And if we haven't, I'll use your metaphor, cleaned our backyard, we don't have the energy, the space, the courage, or the presence to help someone with their backyard.
Right. That's what my good friend, Dr. Karen Redding, that's her big saying. She says it all the time. It's an inside job. Mm-hmm. It's going to have to start inside.
Yeah. Oh, it's magical when we get there.
The more death that we experience, does that change us, or how does it change us? Should it change us? Because I'm thinking about when you're spending Thanksgiving with your mother, right? Mm-hmm. And you're saying, you know, kind of looking at this and saying, this might be the last Thanksgiving mm-hmm. that I get to have with my mom. And I hear that more and more because I'm getting of a certain age. No, that's just someone calling in. Don't worry. I hear it more and more because I'm becoming a certain age of, you know, this is probably going to be the last car that I buy. This is going to be the last home that I live in. This is going to be the last, you know, mattress that I buy. All kinds of things. And I have to say it's scary to me a little bit. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because it used to be, right, when I was a little kid, and I used to be an altar boy. And one of the things that I used to do is I used to serve funeral mass. And so when you served funeral mass, and it was like someone's great-grandparent. Do you know what I mean? And then it's like someone's grandparent. Now it's, you know, and then it's like someone's parent. Now it's like people I went to school with. And as the circle gets smaller, mm-hmm. It's daunting. Yes?
Yes. Yes. And what emotion comes up for you?
Fear.
Fear of your own death.
Probably, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's so, you know, when I contemplate it, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know, like I oscillate, or do I vacillate? A fan oscillates. My mm-hmm. mind probably vacillates, right?
You could oscillate too. Your mind probably oscillates too.
It does, but they're trying to strap it in so it stays stationary. Yeah, I mean, you don't, it's that whole idea of not knowing. Or the other part of it is, like, what is next and what is that like? The other thing that I would say that's really scary for me, right, is, like, that gap. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Of suffering. I guess I would just say suffering scares me, that there'll be suffering before dying. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that scares me is, what did I do with my time?
Mm-hmm. Wow, you brought up a lot in that dialogue you just shared with me, and all are really valuable. I want to start at the very beginning. You said, does death change us? Simple answer, yes. For all the rest of your conversation, it does change us. It makes us question. It makes us challenge our life. It brings up fears. And all of those help us become fully us and more human. You brought up suffering. Life has suffering. So there is this space that people talk about when you ask them, are you afraid of dying? Most people will say no. Well, they'll say, I'm not afraid of death, but I'm afraid of the dying process.
Yes.
Because of the suffering. The beauty nowadays is people don't have to suffer at the end of life for dying of a terminal disease of some type and under care, because there's enough medications so someone doesn't have to feel physical pain. So that can really, really be supported and nurtured. There's a lot of existential suffering that happens, and sometimes that's much more painful than the physical pain. Coming to terms with our life review, oh, I didn't do this, or was I a good parent? Was I a good son? There are all these questions that inspire our lives. And asking those questions before we die give us an opportunity to reconcile them, give us an opportunity to work through them.
And can you?
Yes.
Can you reconcile those things?
You can.
It doesn't take years? I mean, do I need to start now?
Yes, you need to start now. But you know, we all need to start now, and that's the point. Thank you very much. That's the point. It is about now, not what we didn't do and what we did. Who are we in this moment, and how do we want to work with that? Again, keeping us out of the past and the future right into this moment. And death is the greatest leveler. It brings us right here and now. You know, working with hundreds in this process of death has profoundly changed me. Most of the time, not always by any means, you know, some of the little stuff kind of rolls off me. And I'm really, really interested in, like now, being here with you, sharing our hearts, trying to inspire people to be all that they wish, desire, and dream to be in life, to help them embrace what is in their life. You know, embracing life and honoring death is the heart way, embracing life, honoring death.
Right.
Embracing life and honoring death is the same thing. If we are embracing life, then we are honoring death. If we're honoring death, then we're embracing life. the bottom line, all kinds of fears get stirred up. The fear of the unknown. The beauty of that is 90% of our fears usually don't actualize.
Oh, my gosh.
It's things that we're creating, and understanding that gives us the opportunity to work through.
You know, I have to say, I'm so glad you're here, Doctor. Because I don't know how I became this person, but I've sort of become this person now who, like, you know, looks at, like, the mess in the living room and, like, gets paralyzed. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, my gosh, it'll take days. It'll take days to do that. Mm-hmm. And then when you do it, it actually took 20 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So that's part of the stories we build up. And, you know, we have this mind, and I'm amused with myself all the time. Maybe I'm doing a yoga nidra session and relaxing, and I'm supposed to be going through my body, and all of a sudden I go back to childhood, and I go, oh, is that so? Really? In 20 seconds flat, I spent 50 years of my life. Wow, how did I do that? So you start to observe, and this is what some of the Buddhist teaching is, observer mind. Observe the chaotic conundrum in this mind that we have, and it tells stories and creates stories. The beauty, just as we opened with writing a story or a novel, is we can rewrite, as I'm on my 100th edit of Ellie's Ride, we can rewrite our stories anytime we want. We can remythologize and have a new creation. Please don't hear at all that that might not be a difficult process sometimes, but we have that tools because we made up a story originally.
Can you talk a little bit about how we mythologize? You are a mythological scholar.
I am a mythologist, yeah. Yeah. These are some of the ancient stories and traditions that we've heard through around the world, and there's such a deep connection and profound connection to these archetype and experiences that we have in life, and these stories help us live and define and find meaning in life, and that's what death does. Here he goes. Here's your take-home sentence.
Okay, I'm all ears.
Besides, death inspires life. Death brings meaning to life. Take it for a minute. Just close your eyes and imagine, what would life be like if we didn't die?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's lots of movies about that. I don't know because that doesn't happen, right? So, how can anyone really know? Do you know what pops into my mind right away is Interview with a Vampire. Have you seen that movie?
Uh-uh.
Oh, Interview with a Vampire. You haven't seen that? Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt, Antonio Banderas.
I'm working a lot.
it's like 15 years old now. Next time you're on Netflix looking for something, see if you can come with Interview with a Vampire. And that's the whole thing, is that these vampires can't die, and they're miserable.
Exactly. Tuck Everlasting, the Disney film, is the same thing. A family finds the Fountain of Youth. Look at us.
What? I have to say, we're kind of the same idea, but we're sort of at different ends of the spectrum here. Oh, yeah, no, I'm watching creepy vampire movies. Oh, Tuck Disney.
but that's the archetype. They both tell the same story, and that's where we connect. We connect not in the vampire and not in Disney fairy tale. We connect with the story.
With the story.
Yeah, we connect with the meaning in that.
But it's that mythology, right? It's the stories that we create and the stories that we latch onto, that we put value in, that start to determine our path, right? That become our anchors. Mm-hmm. And so if a myth is no longer working for us, can we change the myth? Can we just get a new one?
Yeah, if it's not working anymore, we don't have a living myth. There's a lot of research and studies on that. And we need a living myth to operate fully in this
life.
What
is a living myth?
Something that ignites and charges us.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, for example, for me, one of my living myths is do no harm. That would be one. Mm. Okay. So I'm inspired by that, and I get excited by that, and it inspires my work every day. So before I step into a family, I spend time within myself, my mind, body, and spirit, in trying to access the place where I can be as fully present, hold the sacred space to allow individuals to work through their process. And moving back a little bit to your conversation about death and fear and almost can you prepare for this and work through our emotions. I think we can do the work to allow us to be present, but it's not about, I think, not about being present without feelings. It's being present in a way that we work through emotions. Can I share a story from this week with a family?
Yes.
I've been working with a family for a couple years. Beautiful family. The husband had Alzheimer's, and he ended up the last little bit over a year in some care homes because his wife couldn't manage him at home anymore. He was big. She was a little tiny. He was really a fall risk, and they both would be severely injured if he fell. So we've been caring for him in a boarding care. He's done very, very well, very, very stable, and he died suddenly in his sleep this week. A sudden death in the middle of someone's end-of-life journey. We don't talk too much about sudden deaths and preparing for death. And it threw everybody into this shock, which we know is one of the experiences we have in the grief process. The first is a shock, almost an unbelievable place. Did this really happen? Mm-hmm. What is this? I don't understand it. We process grief physically, emotionally, and spiritually, and they all have a different pace and timing. So sometimes we walked in that morning to the boarding care. The police were there because he ended up being a coroner's case because he wasn't under care. He was just moving along with a doctor. He died suddenly. The caregivers came in the morning, and he had already passed. So the wife now is absolutely in shock, absolutely numb, absolutely shaking with emotions. And when I arrived, of course, I hugged her and she wept, and we worked through the hour and a half process with the coroner. And that's also an interesting experience for the grief process. It really takes us out of having that moment to work through some initial feelings into being questioned.
The business of death.
The business and the suspicion in death. And it's a really difficult place. And I was thinking this week, I haven't had a coroner's case in a long, long, long time. Most of my families I work with are in service with the Heartway, but more importantly with some type of hospice care, and they handle that just beautifully. So the coroners aren't involved. It's a predictable situation. There's not any suspicion of at the end of life with death. But it was so profound, the effect on this lovely woman's experience in grief. But this is a woman that I've worked with for a couple years, has gone to several of my classes and workshop. And just the day before he died, I had done a grief workshop, a grief class. And we talked. We did some love letter writing as an exercise in this particular class. And she looked at me and says, "How timely was yesterday's class?" So the feeling she was going through, like shock and shakiness and almost a surreal feeling, she was able to clue in, okay, this is part of the process. I'm going to work through this. I'm going to be here. It was beautiful. She allowed herself to do that. The next day I met her at the mortuary, and we moved through all the plans. And she was able to do that fully open-hearted, tears flowing, but okay, and grounded in this was part of the journey, and flooded with emotions and love and sadness, almost like that texture of bittersweetness.
Right.
And from that, she felt alive and honored to be part of this process. So there's a beauty in it, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Do you know, someone once said to me, you know, the greatest art, right? And then you can go a lot of places with this. You know, I used to spend a lot of time creating artifacts, and these last 10 years or so, I'm much more interested in the art of living than I am in the art of creating things outside of us. But someone said to me, you know, the art that touches us the most is the art that captures and examines the dignity of human suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can find the beauty, the dignity of your heart breaking, that transforms everyone who comes in touch with that.
Absolutely. We're in a culture that's, we talk about dualistic, right? The Western mind is a dualistic mind, right, wrong, good, bad. Mm-hmm. You know, we have this duality. Eastern cultures have a kind of a pluralistic reality with everything in between the right and wrong is where they try and live and extend. And so they really embrace more the dark side. I kind of, have proposed that we've moved past dualistic into more of a monolithic kind of a not good, bad. We only want to experience good. We only want to experience beauty. So what happens to all that energy? It goes into shadow. It goes into darkness, even darker. It's really hard to be there because we feel we're wrong. We shouldn't feel this.
Right.
If we're on the streets or we've had a loss or we lost our job, we're bad people. We're not worthy. Something's going on. Where in reality, the emotional experience in some cultures have the sameness. And when we, as you said, provide the dignity and the sanctity in that, then they start to meld together. And that's why I love that word bittersweetness, mm-hmm. because it has that texture. And the consequence of that is just being fully alive.
You're right. You're right, because lots of times, right, if I'm experiencing something that's uncomfortable, right, or if something happens to me, like I lose my job or I lose my home or whatever it is, the take on that oftentimes is, well, obviously I'm just getting what I deserve.
Yes. Yes.
Don't know what he did, but it must have been really bad, because look what happened.
Yeah. Exactly. And that ties back to earlier in our conversation. We spend so much energy in shoulda, woulda, coulda-ing ourselves, right? I call it shooting on ourselves, that we're not able to be present and really work through emotion. And please don't hear me wrong. These are difficult situations and hard situations to work through. But, you know, I have to be honest. When I see someone homeless on the street, and whether I spend time with them or go in the market if they're outside a market and buy them a meal, whatever it is, and I sit with them for a little bit, such beautiful people. Some are happier than most people that have those beautiful, exquisite homes. And some are tortured, too. We have all of it. But we connect at that place of humanity. We connect at that place of soul. We connect at that place of archetype. And the more we connect that inside job with ourself into the dark places, I think the more oneness we can have in the world. I was thinking about that just this morning when I was sharing with you about an exciting project I thought about, Yoga Nidra, and out at the homeless shelter. And how can we connect more? We're so splintered right now. What's getting in the way of our splinteredness? And please, I don't have the answer, but my mind tries to think of ways that, what is that? I don't have that answer. But I do know the more we connect with our heart, the more we're open and accept and honor our flaws, if you will, of not being this perfect human that doesn't exist, but culture has expected us to be, then we really can see that space in everyone else. I think that's the seedling where love grows. It absolutely brings chills up my body. That would be my heart prayer for sure.
That's Dr. Andrea Dearhart. She's our guest this morning on Friendship Show. We're going to take a break. We'll be back right after this.
Sharing smoke in the stair above the hot car light. The sunshine hot on the video spot. Sure as any living dream. It's not all in what it seems, and the whole thing's hard to wait. A wound and you're rolling up, you're rolling up, you're holding it, your fabric.
Welcome back to the Friendship Show here on KX 93.5. It's been my tremendous pleasure to have Dr. Andrea Dearhart as our guest this morning. We're getting to that time. It's the hour is almost up. Fascinating to talk with you. Every time you're here, you make me want to cry. You make my head spin. You make my mind race. On purpose? You do that on purpose?
Absolutely not.
This is sort of your job.
Absolutely not.
What do you want us to know before we wrap up?
Yeah, I want to share a couple things with you. It's short notice, but some of you may find a lot of benefit in this. We talked earlier about supporting ourselves through the grief during the holidays, and I think the number one thing that I'd want to share is to honor your process and find the tools and resources to support you if you need that, and knowing that's a position of strength. Please don't hesitate, if the Heartway can support you, to contact us in any way that we can. We will. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us at our website, www.theheartway.org. You can call the office at 949-433-8228. We are a nonprofit and don't charge for our services. And if you have some support and funds that you might be able to share with the Heartway to continue our work, we would be more than grateful as well.
Let me help you with that part.
Sure.
Not if you do or not. Okay, this is a nonprofit organization providing services, free services, to people who find themselves in probably the most difficult time of their life. And frankly, it takes resources to be able to get that done.
It does.
So, this is the season where people give their gift to the organization that they choose. So, how do people give that gift?
You can do it online, donate. You can contact us at the Heartway number, like I said, 949-433-8228, and we would be most grateful. And again, no families are ever charged for services, and our goal is to keep giving to the community. And next year, we've got a lot of beautiful services coming out. Yoga Nidra, which is a beautiful offering of relaxation, inspiration, and actually changing physiology to allow us to move through these emotions and connect with the layers of our being. And we will be offering a training program at the end of next year for the Heartway, becoming a Heartway practitioner, so you can take these skills into your life personally and or professionally. Tomorrow, I do want to tell you that there is a beautiful workshop down in San Diego. It's the Prayer Song Process. It's an experiential workshop that can help you weave your emergent prayers and intentions into reality through the prayer of song. This is a community experiencing happening tomorrow that offers a creative respite from the rigors and distractions of our busy lives, especially now. Emmy Award-winning composer Gary Mulkin has been instrumental in helping us at the Heartway by offering his beautiful CD, Graceful Passages, which we give to each family. You can find out more information of this workshop tomorrow on the Heartway page on Facebook and on our website. It's tomorrow from 12:30 to 3:30. It is in San Diego. So if you can join, I'll be there. So I'd love to meet you if any of you want to come down.
All right. There you have it. Just a couple of things to wrap up. I'm getting messages. People are calling and texting in. This message: tell Andrea I hope she has a blessed holiday season.
Aww.
It's always a great show when
Aww.
She's on. Congratulations
Aww.
To
Beautiful.
That. Can I just say to anyone who's listening, who's a regular of the show or who knows me, I would like to make a pledge. That I will donate $100 to the Heartway Foundation before the end of the year.
Thank you, Mark.
As my community giving. And I challenge anyone who knows me who's listening to do the same.
Thank you.
Well, one more thing.
One more thing. I'd like to share this closing poem I wrote that I think really touches on what we talked about here, and may this serve and support you. Homeward bound, I search, no place to arrive. I circle, no place to arrive. I weep, I am home, right where I began. You are home, my friends, and may that home nurture and flourish all that you are in this world. And please take my love and deep compassion to you as well.
You've been listening to The Friendship Show on KX93.5. Up next, Tommy J and Ida Mae with some radio neighboring. We'll be back next week at 9 o'clock.
Well, I believe the sky will scream. You said the sky will scream. Please don't say what you don't mean. 'Cause I would believe anything.